Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders so they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. If you're new to our podcast, welcome. Encourage you to go back and listen to some of our previous guests. Today, we're going to revisit a conversation we had some time ago with Lucy Ide. She is a CEO of a software company called Remedy, and she works in the healthcare sector. And she has some great insights to share from her career, and I know it will be helpful to you. Looking forward to today's conversation with Lucy. Lucy, it's great to have you join us for today's conversation. I guess, first off, can you give us just a little bit of your background and a little bit about your career?
Sure. Thanks for having me. And so I've spent the past 8 years of my career working in healthcare technology as an entrepreneur. I started a software company called Remedy. But before that, I trained as a physician scientist. So did my MD and PhD at Emory University with every plan of being an academic clinician. But I think went into that with the influence of having worked the first part of my career in technology. So I worked in national intelligence as a physicist and then worked for a venture capital fund as a subject matter expert on mobile and satellite technologies. So, you know, I think going into healthcare with some technology background, saw a little bit of the, you know, world of possibility of what maybe could be done better in healthcare using technology. And that's what got me where I am.
Great. Tell us a little bit about your company and kind of what you do.
Yep. So we are a software company really focused on sort of clinical workflows and management of chronic diseases. At least that's where our roots are. I started the company focused on diabetes. We've expanded it out to other chronic health conditions and really trying to push the envelope of sort of that, you know, what some people think is the future model of healthcare. We would argue it should be the current model of healthcare, and COVID has actually helped accelerate this. Sort of, you know, virtualization of care and a continuous exchange of data and information between patients and their doctors. And then our platform helps clinicians make more personalized and informed decisions about patient care based on both the data from their electronic health record, like, you know, medications and lab tests, but also data out of the home, right? So if I have hypertension, I may have a blood pressure cuff at home that's transmitting that data back to my doctor's office. Or if I have diabetes, I may have a device that's sending my blood glucose results back because this sort of historical model of see your doctor 2 to 4 times a year and you're on your own in between just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Mm.
Yeah, it's definitely impacted. I know I've been dealing with doctors with my, I've got an elderly mom, and all of it's been done, pretty much most of it's been done through telehealth, through video. And so it's definitely escalated a lot of what's taking place in that space. What are some of the things that you see as far as trends that that you're excited about in healthcare?
Well, I certainly think this trend of virtualization of care, whether it's telemedicine, like you just mentioned, or sort of asynchronous data sharing, right? It's what we do, all of us, in the rest of our life with, you know, your tax prep firm, your lawyer, your kids' teachers, right? You communicate asynchronously. You send them information. They send you a reply back. If you need to talk live, you do. If you really need to escalate to an in-person meeting, you can do that. And medicine has been locked in to this sort of in-person care model, mostly because of payment models. So I'm really excited that there's been good movement because of the public health emergency to fix some of those problems around reimbursement. And now there's really good momentum to make some of those fixes permanent.
So thinking back to when you first started your career, we have a lot of listeners that are early in their careers as far as leaders. And if you were to go back early right after you're done with your undergraduate degree at 22, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give Lucy?
I think I would tell her to, you know, worry less and just soak it up. I mean, that's such an amazing period of sort of learning and possibility in life. And, you know, I had a really fun and exciting job that was just sort of a dream of mine. I had actually wanted to be an FBI agent. I had to settle for going to work at the NSA and then at the CIA. But and I'm really glad I did that, right? It was just something that I sort of had in me that I wanted to do. And so I think follow your curiosity and your heart, and, you know, don't really worry about where it's taking you as long as you're learning and growing.
What were some of the early influencers that in your career, are there specific people that you had as mentors? Tell us a little bit about that and the importance of that.
You know, I had some great professors. So I was a physics major, and, you know, in retrospect, I think I got recruited because they didn't have any women. Okay. They needed one.
Sure.
But, you know, but that was sort of the first time I really had someone say, you know, I believe in you. You're really talented at this. You know, I'd, you know, like for you to come join our department, and I think you could, you know, really contribute. And so I think that built a lot of confidence in me, having someone be so direct and open about their interest and sort of identifying a talent.
Sure. So as you think back, was there any advice that you received that you, looking back on it, you wish you would have ignored?
You know, not that I've listened a whole lot to people telling me I can't do things, because I'm fairly stubborn. So if you tell me I can't do something, it makes me that much more interested in trying to do it. But, you know, I certainly think don't listen to that advice. You know, if it's, oh, you can't make that career transition, or you can't work in that area if you don't have experience or background. As I talk to young people, often folks who are interested in going into medicine, but maybe they're not sure if they can get into medical school, or maybe they're not sure what they want to do. And, you know, I often counsel them of, if it's, you know, where your curiosity and passion is, there's really no reason you can't do it.
So when you went thinking back to when you first started, your first either inherited a team to manage, or you were building your first leadership team, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give somebody who is kind of going into that first leadership role as you're guiding the team and providing them leadership?
You know, I always think the team's about how you sort of complement weaknesses and strengths, right? How you match that up. And it's something I learned when I was getting my PhD, was that if I could find collaborators, even on projects, who had skill sets I didn't have, that meant I didn't have to know everything myself. And so I've sort of carried that forward into management of, you know, find that nice intersection where you have alignment of culture and mission, but really bring complementary skills to sort of be able to divide and conquer, because you don't have to be good at everything.
So when you think back of, you know, managers that you've seen, or as a CEO of a company and have led teams, what are some of the common mistakes that you see younger leaders make that you think would be helpful to see kind of the those potential missteps that people have in their first leadership role?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I've had a really nice cohort of other entrepreneurs who I've gotten to know over the past, 5 to 8 years, and sort of watched their careers as well. And most of them are first-time leaders, first-time CEOs, first-time entrepreneurs. And I think micromanaging is one really common big mistake, and sort of not knowing how to grow out of the day-to-day operations when you start. You know, you wear every hat, you do everything, and that's been something hard for me to let go, but you're not going to build a team who really feels like they're part of the team if they don't feel ownership. So really learning how to delegate and let people own something, right? That's motivating, that when they succeed, it's because they've, you know, gotten the project over the finish line. They've done the hard work. You know, when they fail, though, it's sort of on everyone as a leader. That's your responsibility, is to step in to support folks when they need you, but to give them the space when they don't.
We live in a strange time. We were talking a little bit before we started our recording and about kind of what we're facing and just kind of uncharted waters. And for leaders, just having to deal more with virtual teams and kind of trying to keep people motivated and focused. What are some things that you're doing or have found helpful or seen others that are doing that that you think is some great advice or tips that people can use as they're managing teams?
Yeah, I think what's hardest we have found, I've heard from others about this virtual environment, right, is the sort of lack of those informal conversations that you would usually have as you're walking in the door together with someone or as you're walking out to lunch or just between meetings. And so it felt a little awkward at the beginning of the pandemic to sort of force yourself to have those informal conversations. We use Slack a lot, so that's a good place where you can, without interrupting somebody's day, just sort of say, hey, they know you're there, and then they can respond when they've got a free moment. But trying to structure a little bit of that sort of check-in time of like, hey, I'm here if you want to talk. We've been doing virtual happy hours, but you know, I think many of us have experienced it, like everyone in your life wants to do a virtual happy hour, right? Your work, your friends, your family. So that became a little overwhelming for a period of time. But you know, it feels like everyone's finding the right cadence as we adapt, as we were saying before this, from sort of the fire drill response to the, okay, if we're in this for another 6 to 12 months, how does this become the new normal routine?
Is there any technology? You mentioned Slack is something you use as a company, but personally, anything that has helped you be more productive or habits that you've developed that you think are have helped you become actually being able to focus and keep on track?
Yeah, I'm sort of a compulsive note taker. I always have been, and I think it's partially just how I sort of focus and process information. But I, you know, as I've sort of gone further and further into this journey, that is so incredibly helpful to have all that history there. I used to use Evernote, and then as Apple has improved their notes, I finally switched over and imported all my Evernote into Apple. But, you know, having that sync across all platforms and be searchable, and I can go back and say, hey, that person who just reached out, I talked to them in 2016, and here's what we talked about then. And that's been, you know, incredibly helpful. And I think you don't always appreciate the moment that you may want to look back and find those notes from 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah.
Every leader that I've talked to is, you know, have a personal kind of habit as far as of continuing to grow and develop and read and stay on top of things. Are there any books that you've read that you recommend to new leaders or to people in your team that you think are helpful?
Yeah, so I think probably on a lot of people's list, but it was recommended to me, and I do think back to it a lot, is Good to Great, and sort of specifically that concept of getting the right people on the bus and getting them in the right seats, and that's sort of a constant process, you know, as your company grows and dynamics change because of growth, because of market dynamics, sort of constantly revisiting, you know, do we have the right people on the team, and do we have them in the right seats on the bus, to really optimize how we operate as a team. So that's a great one. And then, you know, I think the sort of creativity is something I often come back to, and, you know, how do we not fall into our daily habits and sort of lose that, you know, sort of dreaminess of creativity and the ability to force yourself to, you know, or allow yourself to think. And so this is one that I'm sure is not on many people's list, but I was thinking about this ahead of the call because you had mentioned this question. I have 4 children, and I was reading to the youngest one the other day poems out of Shel Silverstein's Where the Sidewalk Ends. And it just impressed on me, like reading poetry and just the creativity of people like that. You know, I mean, I just sat there and thought, you know, how amazing what the human race is and human brains are, that we come up with these, you know, whether it's art or poetry or, you know, new technology ideas. So trying to find, whether it's fiction or poetry or something, just to inspire yourself with the creativity of others, I have found to be very helpful.
Great. So outside of work, what do you do to kind of recharge?
You know, one thing that was sort of my go-to favorite passion was travel, but that's obviously on hold a little bit at the moment. But as I mentioned, I have four boys, and that keeps me really busy and sort of the dance around, you know, helping manage their lives. They're between 4 and 16, and okay. my work wow. and my husband's work. So a lot of my free time is spent with them, but it really is an escape, right? If you can sort of be in the moment with, you know, a friend, a spouse, a child, I think it's one of the challenges leaders and entrepreneurs mm-hmm. face is being able to shut it down and sort of leave work, whether it's for 5 minutes or a whole day on a weekend, can be really hard at times.
So what parting advice would you give somebody as they're starting out their leadership career, and what would you tell them?
You know, I tell them to stick with their convictions, be passionate about their ideas, but you know, to constantly listen and learn. Don't be so dogged about your own preconceptions that you're not willing to adapt to feedback.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Lucy. This has been fun talking with you. I appreciate your thoughts today, and wish you continued success as you navigate your company and all the things that you're doing.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader. Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.